This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
We're not going to fight about it right now because that would be unprofessional.
Yeah, we'll fight about it when the cameras are off.
Yes. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
My throat just made an insane noise. Uh-oh.
Oh, gosh. We're off to a good start.
Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast. Listen, this is the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture and whatever else we want.
Yep.
And if you don't like it,
please keep listening until you do.
Yeah. Listen, every episode is different. I feel like I'm a different person every time I get in front of the microphone. Mm. So maybe this week
that's beautiful.
You'll like me and you won't be like, gosh, she's annoying. Isn't she the worst?
Yep. Let's give it a try. Today, we are doing something a little bit different. Mm. We are going to talk about sort of one-off throwaway jokes and references to Mormons in pop culture that isn't explicitly about Mormons. So like just a movie where there's a random Mormon joke. Mm-hmm. We want to dig into some of those examples and rate the jokes, first of all, and then just sort of unpack them a little bit. So we've come up with a little bit of a rating system. Let me break it down. We're going to rate them using three criteria. First, how funny they are. Second, how accurate they are. And third, how uncomfortable they made us when we were active Mormons.
Yeah, how closely we clutched our pearls.
Yes.
Our little Mormon pearls.
Just how much anxiety we felt about the damage control we were going to have to do with our friends.
Yeah. How high our heart rate went up.
Yes.
Like as soon as we heard it.
So today we're just going to focus on a couple, but we feel like this could be a recurring segment that we do. And we really want to like enlist listeners' help in compiling examples like this. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many, but there's not a great place to go. There's not like a database of these examples
that we
can turn to.
And we want to be the database.
Yes. So let's become the database.
Yeah. It's always been my dream to be a database.
Yes. We'll kick it off in this episode with a couple of examples. But if you have some that you want to have rated on our objective and scientific and important scale, then you should send them to us at pleasebless pod@gmail.com.
Please do.
Where should we begin? Let's talk about 2 weeks' notice. A great film, an important film.
That's a really important film.
Yeah.
I think that everything Hugh Grant's done has been of the utmost importance.
Big Hugh Grant fan. I loved him in Paddington 2.
Oh, Elisa, you're speaking my language.
I think Paddington 2 is the pinnacle of his career.
Yeah, he's my prime minister at the end of the day.
He's my prime minister. I also have seen him on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, where he's asked questions about co-stars he's had. Questions that like another person would be like, I'm not willing to answer that. And he just answers. Like Andy Cohen was like, what do you think of Renee Zellweger? And he was like, oh, she's nuts. She's out to lunch. She's baddie. Love. And I was like, oh, wow, he is not holding back. But when he was asked about Sandra Bullock, first of all, he called her Sandy, which I love.
Wow.
Second of all, he sang her praises. He just thinks so highly of her.
Yeah, I mean, if he's the prime minister, she's the secretary of state.
Ooh, no, I accept that. I accept
that. Yeah. Or she's like the governor of, like, I don't know, somewhere kind of trashy but hot. Like, you know, Oklahoma. I don't know. Gosh. Sorry.
We're off the rails. We're off the rails. Okay, so let's talk about the Mormon joke in 2 weeks' notice. Blink and you miss it. But I, in 2002, was Mormon. When I left the theater, it was the only thing I remembered. So Sandra Bullock's character is angry at Hugh Grant's character because he invites a woman to an event that they have been planning to go to together.
Ugh.
And she's complaining about this to a friend, and the friend says to Sandra Bullock, like, well, he invited you too, like, it's not a big deal. And Sandra Bullock says, how many women do you think a man should take to dinner? Maybe in Utah. That's the whole joke.
Wow. Like a knife straight to the heart.
Yes. The word Mormon is not used, but no. I knew what it was about.
We all know.
Polygamy, the lowest hanging fruit.
I know. Can they come up with something else? There are so many reasons to make fun of Mormons.
Yes.
And we're always just hammering away at polygamy, which is, if you can have a sense of humor about it, it's pretty funny.
It's definitely one of the things to make fun of. Yes. But it's not all there is. And what we found in our research for today's episode, it shows up an awful lot. It really takes up a lot of space.
Comedy writers, step up.
Yeah, do better.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's rate this joke. How many women do you think a man should take to dinner, maybe in Utah?
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how funny?
I don't really think it's funny. It's like a 2 or 3, you know?
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I actually think it feels like a first draft of that joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, make an allusion to polygamy there. Fine. But mm-hmm. do it better than this. How many women do you think a man should take to dinner? Maybe in Utah?
Maybe. And like the delivery just isn't very...
There's not like a rhythm or a pizzazz to it.
No,
no
pizzazz.
Back to the writer's room with that one.
Please.
Yes.
I wonder if she improvised that line.
Mm, oof. Yeah, maybe we'll have to invite her on the podcast and ask one day. Scale of 1 to 10, how accurate is this joke?
I mean, whatever. It's medium accurate. Mm-hmm. Plenty 4 of polygamists in Utah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're going to make a joke about a guy seeing multiple women at once. Yeah. Utah.
I guess Utah's probably where it's happening. So, you know, a 5.
Sure.
Although they're probably not going out to dinner. Because it's you know, there's a stigma around it. You kind of keep that under wraps, but whatever. 5.
Okay. Being generous.
In 2002, how uncomfortable did this joke make you?
I mean, I don't recall, but I can imagine. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that I would have had a little Mormon chip on my shoulder about this. Mm-hmm. There was always an internal conflict because as a Mormon, you want to have a sense of humor about being a Mormon mm-hmm. because it's how you get through without being super bullied by everybody. Yes. You know,
you have to be able to laugh at yourself to get by in the world. Yeah.
But then you're also fighting that urge to be like, well, actually, that it would not be completely accurate because
Mormons don't actually practice polygamy. Like, I don't know if you know this.
Right. And they haven't for like more than 100 years.
Yeah. Get your facts straight, Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. I'm never seeing another Sandra Bullock film again. I mean, I would have never said that.
Oh,
God bless her.
It never came to that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, this was a 10 for me. Which is absurd, right?
That's really funny.
Absurd.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was mortified by this joke. In thinking back on it for this episode, I was like, what on earth made me feel so uncomfortable when I heard a joke like this as an active Mormon. And I think it's like a couple of things. I think one is that as a Mormon, you are constantly pressured to defend the church from like as young as you are aware of the fact that you're a Mormon and the fact that people think that's weird.
Right.
Immediately, even as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about like primary songs we sang that like indoctrinated us into this. Like,
yeah.
I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I know. You're supposed to be proud and you got to keep a chip on your shoulder. Keep, you know, keep yourself on your toes. You know, because everybody else is hearing the joke about Mormons in the movie. So if you don't speak up and correct the falsehoods, these people are going to be walking away with, wow, the front of their mind is going to be that one joke about Mormons.
Yes.
And they're going to walk away with all these misconceptions.
And if you don't take the opportunity to correct it in the moment, you have failed in your duty as a Latter-day Saint.
Yeah.
And not only is it the pressure to defend the church, but the pressure to convert people to the church.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the end goal of the defense. It's not just like, no, 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 I'm normal and I want you to know that I'm, you know, not what this is portraying me as. It's, I need you to know that the church is a church you could join.
Right.
And that you should.
It's like, I am not this. This is wrong, but I am different. And it's a good thing. And you could be different too.
Yes. In retrospect, that is an insane kind of pressure to put on little kids.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a little kid in 2002 when this movie came out, but I felt this way as far back as I can remember.
Yeah. It's rough when you're that little kid defending Mormonism, like on top of just already getting picked on enough for it. Then you're like standing up, you know, in your armor of God for Mormonism. I should say, we've mentioned this in previous episodes, but we did not grow up in Utah.
Right.
There, so there's a special little element there.
Yes, where we grew up in the mission field, as people like to say, which yikes.
Yikes.
And so again, there was this pressure to like always be on and like performing a kind of Mormonism that would be palatable and enticing to people so that they would ask you about it. They would want to know, oh, why are you this way? And you were just like, you always had this like imaginary spotlight on you to represent the church and defend the church.
I mean, sometimes imaginary, sometimes people would up approach you and say, are you Mormon? I can tell.
Like teachers I had in school. I remember having a US history teacher who was like, I know you're a Mormon. Why don't you like defend basically the history of Mormonism for this class?
Yikes.
And it was this thing I felt like horrified to do, but also like I had to do it perfectly.
Did you do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, 100%.
Yikes.
And I told the like squeaky clean rosy colored version of Mormon history that I knew. And luckily my history teacher didn't, you know, know a whole lot more than I did. So it was fine. But just being put in that position, like, what?
That's so messed up.
So strange. Or like, I've told you the story. A friend of mine, her mom was like driving me home one day and was like, I've heard that you're a Mormon. And I said, yeah. And she was like, so it's too bad you don't believe in Jesus. And I was like, oh, but I do. And she was like, no, you don't. And I am a child.
That's scary.
And this adult woman is like, no, you don't. You don't know. And I went home and was just like racked by that experience. I remember the elders came over, the missionaries came over for dinner, maybe not long after. And I told them about that. And they gave me a pamphlet about like Jesus. And I gave it to her.
Wow.
I was a child.
That's crazy. You should not have been doing stuff like that.
And I gave this adult woman a pamphlet to be like, no, see, we do believe in Jesus. Here's what my church teaches. Like, come to me with your questions. I'm I mean, what?
And she's so like, okay, child.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have no idea what she thought. We never spoke of it again.
Wow.
But just the fact that I felt compelled to do that is just evidence to me that I was under a lot of fucking pressure.
Yeah. I remember it coming at me from left and right pretty much all throughout my life. People love to say crazy stuff about Mormons to you. I think it's because Mormons are a little bit defensive, so it's like easy target for kind of crazy people to be like, I'm gonna engage this child and see what they can come up with, you know.
Oh yeah,
because I'm crazy and I know that this will be fun or whatever.
I know, I can win an argument with a small child, so how about I go ahead and engage them in one?
And like, nothing this child can say will change my mind. You know, just like if today, if I were to go talk to some Mormon child, they're not going to talk me back into being Mormon. You know,
I definitely had experiences with adults like that who I think were trying to catch me out to sort of like make themselves feel smart and right. Yeah, and I did get better over time at navigating that. Like, I had so my high school physics teacher, we were in a one-on-one setting. I don't know why. And he said, I hear you're a Latter-day Saint. Just like that, that exact inflection.
Whoa.
And I could feel it, you know, like you feel it coming. Like, here we go. This person has an opinion. He said, I'm sure you come from a good family, but I'll pray for you.
Okay.
And I said, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to say that to me. And he immediately looked sort of freaked out.
Yeah.
Like, good. Oh, this person is not gonna just let me talk to her this way.
Yeah.
In this weird one-on-one setting with our power dynamic.
Yeah, and that's totally inappropriate.
After that, like, a couple of things happened that showed me he knew he had overstepped and he was trying to like make sure I didn't turn him in or something. So there was a contest where we had to build bridges out of popsicle sticks. My best friend Andrea and I built our bridge and it was terrible. It was nonsense. It was the worst bridge in the class. And he chose it as one of like the three bridges from the school to go to this competition, where we went to like downtown Seattle and our bridges had like weight put on them and the strongest bridge won. Our bridge collapsed immediately.
Yeah.
At the slightest touch. It was not a well-engineered bridge, but we were chosen, I think, because he knew he had messed up.
Wow.
He also created a policy where if you had a certain grade in the class, you didn't have to take the final. And because my bridge had been chosen to go to this contest, I was one of the only people in the class with a grade high enough not to take the final. And so during the final, I sat out in the hall and played Uno with my friend.
Wow.
And again, I was like, this is because he messed up and he knows it and he's worried I'm going to say something.
Man, sometimes your life sounds like you were in a sitcom, you know,
a really weird, tragic, awkward sitcom.
Yeah. Well, kids, sometimes it pays to be Mormon.
Sometimes it pays to be Mormon. Get out of that physics test. And I still don't know a thing about physics, proudly.
Who needs it? Physicists?
I guess. Yeah. 10 out of 10, uncomfortable with that 2 weeks notice.
For sure. Yeah, I would say that looking back, so I was a kid, I was 10 years old when that came out. I would have probably been about a 7. I would have been like, oh, but I don't think I would have dwelled on it.
Good for you.
I don't think it would have plagued me like it did you.
Good for you, Katie. That's so healthy.
Yeah, I could be healthy. Let's talk about Gilmore Girls.
Let's talk about Gilmore Girls. So there are actually quite a few Mormon references in Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Amy Sherman Palladino did not want to leave us alone.
No, no, no. She would not let up.
She thinks Mormons are a pack of weirdos.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that comes through. So there are a few references we could talk about, but we wanted to focus on one, an episode where Mormons are really in the spotlight. And it's season 4, episode 10, The Nanny and the Professor. Let me provide a little context about where we are at this point in the series. Mm. It is Rory's freshman year at Yale. The Independence Inn that Lorelai manages has burned down. Mm. And she and Suki and Michelle are working on building the dragonfly.
The dragonfly.
Also, Suki has just had a baby.
Baby.
So they're having meetings at Suki's house. And in walks Tobin, the former night manager of the Independence Inn, mm-hmm. who is now functioning basically as a nanny for Suki's baby. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, surprised to see him. You know, they're like, where have you been? And he says he moved to Utah because he saw that there were a lot of opportunities for industrious Mormons. And Lorelai says, wait, are you a Mormon?
Yeah.
And he says, oh, he became one. And a couple of things about becoming a Mormon. He says the paperwork took weeks.
Right.
Which we can talk about.
Yeah. Okay.
He said he was surprised by no alcohol. And Lorelai's like, yeah, they famously abstain.
Very famously.
Mm-hmm. And then he says, the choir was fabulous, but then there's the funny underwear.
Mm-hmm. Very unfortunate.
Ooh, more low-hanging fruit for Mormon jokes.
Yeah.
So Tobin.
Lots of
converts to Mormonism.
Yeah. Last person you would expect to convert to Mormonism.
Last person you would expect, and yet also the first person you would expect.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
He's like, what we know about his character leading up to that is that he's really nice. Mm-hmm. He's passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He really kisses his boss's ass.
So there kind you go. Fits. Pipeline.
So before we dig into unpacking this scene, we got to rate it. Okay, on a scale from 1 to 10, how funny is this bit?
I think it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. I'd give it like a 7 or 8.
I think it's pretty funny too.
It's funny. The randomness of the character, mm-hmm. like you could tell they like really wanted to shoehorn a Mormon character.
Yes.
They had some jokes, you know, in the chamber.
Yes.
Just waiting, you know, so they had
it's not Tobin. Just throwaway references to Mormons. We have a real live Mormon in the show.
Yeah.
We have someone who joins happen? The church. I mean,
I think the line, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for industrious Mormons is so funny.
Hilarious.
That is so funny. And also it does kind of feel like when you leave the church, like for me leaving the church when I was young and then going through like early adulthood, which like sucks and is hard and you're poor. I remember sometimes feeling like, man, if I had just stayed in the church, or like me, if me and my husband went back to church, I feel like we could make a killing among yes, the Mormons.
Among the Mormons. No, when I was on my mission, if someone got baptized who was young and single, they went straight to Utah.
Yeah.
There was like a baptism to Utah pipeline for young industrious Mormons. And it was like, you're going there not only to sort of, you know, get a job or whatever, but to like be among other young industrious Mormons.
Yeah.
So 8 out of 10, I think.
Yeah. It was funny.
How accurate?
Quite inaccurate. yeah. I think if someone were trying to take advantage of everything that we just explained by like shoehorning themselves into Mormonism, I think 9 times out of 10, they'd quickly turn around and like hightail it out of there. Number one. Number two, the paperwork. There is absolutely no paperwork. It's legwork. You know, there's some legwork and some time invested for sure. But paperwork? Yeah. Do you sign anything?
I can't remember.
Is there an initial at any point?
I don't know. You might sign something.
Uh-huh.
There is paperwork. It's like the missionaries, the bishop, the mission president. There is paperwork.
Sure. You're not doing any of it.
But I don't think you, as the convert, are doing a ton of paperwork. I do think you're doing some. I do think you're signing something.
All right.
I'm going to give it a higher score than you, I think, on accuracy.
Okay.
Paperwork. I mean, the spirit of that joke is true.
Yeah, it's true.
Even if it's not literal paperwork, it is so involved. You have to take all these lessons. You have to make all these commitments. You have to have multiple interviews. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think there are churches where you can get baptized more easily than the Mormon church.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Some you just show up.
If you are like living with a domestic partner, you have to move out or get married. If you smoke cigarettes, you have to stop for a certain amount of time. Mm. You know, there are these like prerequisites you have to hit that can be sort of substantial and can take kind of a long time.
Right. Yeah. And like, let's assume that he was actively drinking alcohol when he moved to Utah.
Yeah.
That's a bump along the road.
So the paperwork part is, I think it's funny. It's funny and pretty accurate.
Yeah.
The funny underwear, accurate. It's real. There is some funny underwear going on if you get deep enough. The caveat there is you have to have been a member at least a year.
Right.
To be in deep enough that you're going to the temple, receiving your endowment, wearing the underwear.
So Tobin had not been through the temple.
It hadn't been long enough.
No.
So I'm going to say 6.
All right.
6, 7.
Elisa. Okay. That's okay. We'll talk about it later. That's not our official score.
It's not our official score. It's not going in the database yet.
We're not going to fight about it right now because that would be unprofessional.
Yeah, we'll fight about it when the cameras are off.
Yes.
Okay. How uncomfortable. Did that joke make you as an active Mormon or would that joke have
the funny underwear? The funny underwear. That is a very taboo Mormon joke.
Ooh, Mormons do not like those jokes.
No, they do not. That is a turn off the TV right now moment.
How dare you?
Which those, you know, it's funny. I think that you and I had different perspectives as kids because you were like more defensive. And I was defensive of the church, but I also just like was mostly scared of mom and dad seeing me taking in that kind of content, you know? Mm-hmm. So my mind immediately goes to like, oh my gosh, what if I had watched that scene with mom or dad in the room and how would they have responded to it? Because that's really like all that my brain cared about.
Sure.
And they would have been so mad.
Yeah. I mean, I know they've watched Gilmore Girls, so I wonder how do they feel. We should ask mom about it
because
I guess, think she's in the middle of a Gilmore Girls rewatch right now.
Oh wow.
We should be like, what season are you on, what episode are you on?
Yeah,
kind of tease it out.
Yeah, because our parents are also the type who would just like kind of pretend it didn't happen at this point in time. Now that they're older, when they were younger they had a lot more zeal.
So what's your score on uncomfiness?
I don't know. It's hard for me to say. It's hard to put myself in those shoes again, but probably pretty uncomfy. Probably a solid 7 again.
I'm going to say 10. In a surprise to no one, it was a 10 for me. Oh gosh.
Man.
I was a sensitive little Mormon, I guess. And it's not that I didn't recognize that it was funny. I did. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I didn't recognize that there were accuracies there. Like, for sure.
For sure.
I was just so on the defensive about the church, especially at this point in time. This was about 2004, but I didn't watch it until right after my mission. That's when I first watched Gilmore Girls. So I'm at the height of defensiveness.
Yeah, you're freshly traumatized.
I have just spent a year and a half trying to convince people that they want to be Mormons. Mm. And that is a tough job.
Like, yeah.
I'll tell you, it is a brutal work. Mm. And so, you know, that's the mindset I'm in watching this. And I'm just like, how dare they characterize conversion to the church so flippantly when it's a thing that's hard and like an important choice and that makes people's lives better. And like, oh, this is so diminutive of the real experience.
Mm-hmm. You were ready to fight.
I was ready to fight. I was like, how dare you?
Amy Sherman Palladino, let's go.
And like, in retrospect, those feelings had way more to do with how deep I was in and how much I'd already devoted to this church. I needed it to be true. I needed it to be like a positive, normal path for people. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what on earth was I doing? What had I been doing for the last year and a half? Yeah. So I was defending myself too at that point.
Mm-hmm.
10.
It's a 10. I think I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about it. One thing that it made me think about was kind of like we talked about earlier, how you're raised from a young age to defend the church, but also to like kind of obsessively think about how you can convert people to it.
Mm-hmm.
And jokes like this make fun of that. Mm-hmm. Effort.
Yeah. In a way that really hurts. You know, you're a little Mormon kid. You're like, man, I wish that more people were like me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm coming from a place of like being a 12 or 13, 14 year old when I'm watching mm-hmm. this. And I'm like, you know, sure would be nice to not be different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, oh, that's how people see you. Okay.
Yes. Sure. That's the thing. It's such an intense experience to feel like absolute devotion to an institution while also being like embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
And to feel like you have to defend it, but also you really would rather never talk about it and you wish people just didn't even know.
Yeah.
There's just like so much turmoil in that space.
Yeah. And I think that that's like where you and I took different paths. It's like, I just wanted to not identify with it anymore at a much younger age.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I need to be independent of this or I am going to be so unhappy, because mm-hmm. it made me so unhappy.
And I went all in, mm-hmm. all in, and it made me very unhappy.
Yeah.
All roads led to unhappy.
Yeah. It was a tough time.
So I was thinking about like experiences I had as a kid where I felt like I had to share the gospel and try to convert people that are like kind of unhinged.
Okay, tell me.
Because that's what Tobin makes me think of. So one example I thought of was like, I think it was my freshman year of high school, my seminary teacher, I might have been even younger, might have been a Sunday school teacher, taught us a lesson about missionary work. And we were assigned to like this homework where we were supposed to go home and make a list of everybody we knew who we thought would make a good Mormon.
Wow.
And then you were supposed to like pray about that list and like try to receive promptings from the Holy Ghost about who was ready and who you would share the gospel with or give a Book of Mormon to or whatever. So I had that list written in my school notebook. And one day I'm sitting in class flipping through my notebook and my friend's sitting next to me and she says, wait, go back to that page. I saw my name on it. And I was like,
gosh, Elisa, I don't know if I can listen to this.
Even just telling the story, I feel tense. I was just like, no, you cannot see that page. And she's like, why is my name in your notebook? And I think I said, I was just making a list of all my best friends.
That's nice.
Which is kind of cute, but she was like, okay, weirdo. Yeah. And honestly, we were not friends after that. Like, she kept her distance from me.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird.
It was so weird.
Oh, Elisa, are you sure your life wasn't like a coming of age 90s sitcom?
It was mortifying. Therefore, when I see Tobin, it's a 10. The mortification is already in me.
Yeah, you're primed.
It's in my bones. The other example I was thinking of was, I was a ward missionary. That was like my calling when I was at BYU.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in campus housing. I don't think there was anyone who lived within our ward boundaries at that time who was not already a Mormon.
Yeah.
And you had to be relatively active in the church to even be allowed to stay at BYU. So it wasn't like there was a lot of missionary work to be done in that ward.
Yeah.
And I remember the ward missionary, because we didn't have a lot of stuff to do, he wrote a musical. He wrote and produced a musical about the church. That's a story for another day, but whew. Anyway, because I was a ward missionary and I needed to take my calling seriously, I talked to the ward mission president about, like, well, what do we do to share the gospel when we're in this BYU ward? And he said, you carry pass along cards with mm-hmm. you everywhere you go. Pass along cards are like, you give them to somebody and it has like a website they can go to get a free Book of Mormon or something.
Yeah.
He's like, you carry pass along cards every time you leave campus and you give one away anytime you set foot off campus.
Okay.
So I was like, I am like embarrassed to even say this. I'm like worried about the internet coming for me for this, but it's just the truth. We were like leaving pass along cards as tips at restaurants.
Stop. You were that person.
We would leave money too, but like, and a pass.
Right. You were that. Listen, I've been on the opposite end of that.
Have you?
Yeah.
You've been given a pass along card as a
kid? not an LDS pass along card, but piece of literature sure. from such and such religion only sure. about 100 times. Yeah. That's
I'm
like,
so sorry,
Elisa. I don't know if I'm ever going to look at you the same.
I don't even know what to say. I can't even recognize myself in these stories.
You are a completely different person in so many ways.
The other thing I would do is when I was like on a plane, if I was flying home or something, I always felt this intense pressure to like strike up a conversation with the person next to me, try to sort of direct it to the church, try to get them to ask questions, and then slip in that pass along card. Mm. It was like a thing I was actively anticipating, not because I wanted to do it. Wow. I didn't want to do it. Yeah. I didn't want to talk to anybody on a plane ever, but I felt like I had to. I felt like I was supposed to.
Elisa, I think that this, we've uncovered the Mormon to MLM pipeline.
Go on.
This is where those two worlds collide so beautifully, because mm-hmm. we've talked about this before, how Mormons fall into MLM culture so mm-hmm. easily. It's like, it seems like everybody in these freaking MLMs is Mormon. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you're doing. You are the annoying person who's like striking up a conversation. The other person thinks you're just being friendly. Oh no, I'm trying to sell
I'm
you
I'm trying
mascara.
To recruit you. Yes. Right. And my existence within this institution is validated by you becoming a part of it.
Right.
And like materially validated in the case of an MLM.
Right. I mean, you do buy into the church.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I feel like I've been really vulnerable and I shared something I had never planned to talk about. I would have taken that to the grave if it weren't for freaking Tobin and the trauma that scene brings up for me.
Amy Sherman Palladino. Yeah, this has been revelatory.
I will say, in my current state, I don't find that scene uncomfortable at all.
No, I think it's funny.
It's funny.
Yeah.
I think the fact that I ever found it uncomfortable is hilarious and embarrassing.
That is really funny.
I think that people who currently find it uncomfortable need to take a long, hard look at themselves.
Yeah.
It is a 0 out of 10 uncomfortable.
No. Yeah. Come on, people. Get real. You know, this conversation has been really beautiful for our relationship. I can see why you and I had, I don't want to say difficulties when we were younger, because our relationship has always been
good,
fine to great.
Yeah. Good to great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like there were some times when you were in college where we didn't really interact.
Sure. Sure.
Other than on holidays.
That's fair.
Which is not the case now. Now we pretty much are in constant communicado. This is interesting. This is healing some wounds between us, I think, for me.
And of course there was distance. I mean, there was physical distance between us because I lived in a different state. But there was also this distance because I was so deep in this culture. I was at BYU. You were feeling more and more distant from it.
Mm-hmm.
I was sensing your distance from it and thinking about you in terms of how do I keep her in?
Yeah. And to me, it seemed like a withdrawal,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you were withdrawing from our relationship, because what I did get from you was like, let's say around the time you were on your mission, you mm-hmm. know, before or shortly after, it was like our deepest conversations, I feel like, were about your testimony. You'd surprise mm-hmm. me with a gift
of a Book of Mormon with your testimony written in it, which is nice. Obviously, anytime you give me, if you ever want to give me a book and just write about your feelings in it, I would love that.
I would love that in a different context. If you gave me a book and wrote about how much you loved that book and what it meant to you.
Or just like how happy you are.
That is a 10 out of 10 gift. You could give me that gift anytime. But when it's a Book of Mormon, no, that's not, that is not.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
No, I mean, I am embarrassed by my behavior during that time in particular around my mission, because I think I was just, I was in a rough headspace and I was trying to make sense of myself and the world and my beliefs. And ironically, that set me on a path out.
Yeah. I mean, you were doing the best you could.
Before it set me on a path out, I fought hard to figure out a way to be all in.
Yeah, you did. And see, I could say that I feel embarrassed about that time in my life too, because I was on the opposite end of the spectrum, feeling very like a lot of shame. And I think I misbehaved and rebelled in ways that obviously, I mean, that most teenagers do, but you know, I in retrospect feel embarrassment about, because you didn't need to do all that. Though if I had had somebody to talk to, maybe I wouldn't have.
Yeah. It's so ironic when you think about how the claims of the church and of members of the church are that it's all about families and bringing families together. It's all about like protecting you from the difficulties of life, kind of like putting this like cocoon around you to keep you safe. But it actually put distance between us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
And it created scenarios where we were traumatized and unsure of ourselves and acting in ways that we don't see ourselves in.
No, not at all. Totally floundering. It's a safe place for families so long as the families fit just right into
that. As long as they walk the line perfectly.
Right.
So I didn't expect this discussion of 2 weeks notice and Gilmore Girls to go all the way here.
No.
But I'm really glad we got here, Katie.
Yeah. Who needs therapy?
Who needs therapy when you have a podcast? Let's never speak of the revelations in this podcast again.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to talk to other people about it.
Not to me. I can't handle it. Too cringe. Well, this has been dynamite. Again, if you have a specific like Mormon reference in pop culture, just like a throwaway joke that you think is significant, send it our way. We want to rate it. PleaseBlessPod@gmail.com.
PleaseBlessPod. If you've seen it, we've probably seen it and we will add it to the database.
Yep.
Which is very real, which exists.
I mean, where do you even go from there?
Where do you go from here? What are you going to do to recover?
No, I'm going to need to just sit with myself for a few minutes, come down from the embarrassment.
Yeah. In a couple days, we can maybe talk again. And
yeah.
We'll see.
I understand. If you
we'll see where space. You're at.
Well, that's all for today, folks.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening.
And please bless this podcast.
Please bless.
Amen.